from Akron, Ohio. This is episode 175.
It's actually 173.
Of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are talking about the trope of gaslighting, and then we're going to talk about our top five favorite examples. Maybe not favorite examples, but most examples of gaslighting. As always, I'm your host, Nick, and I would never gaslight you. And today I'm joined by...
Sir.
And Kyle.
Sir. What is gaslighting?
So the trope name is a film called Gaslight, where it's this guy who's trying to, I believe, swindle money out of a wealthy heiress, and he basically tries to convince her that she's going insane. Mm-hmm. And the scene is from him, like, dimming the lights. It's like flickering them on and off. You've seen it, I've seen.
Is it a play too?
So it started off as a play, and then they made a movie, and then a few years later they made another movie. I've seen the second one, which has Ingrid Bergman and Joseph Cotten in it. And Ingrid Bergman marries a man. He's a not great, spoiler alert, if you know anything about the trope. He's a scumbag. But the term gaslighting comes from one of the things she knows. She thinks she hears like footsteps in the attic, and at night the lights all start dimming, and they dim because he's upstairs in the attic, and when he turns the light on, some of the gas is going up there, so the lights downstairs go down a little bit.
Yeah, so it's essentially deliberately trying to drive someone mad by altering their environment without their knowledge, then denying it. That's straight from TVTropes.org. It's also like a common thing in abusive relationships, like people
trying to
control their partners and convince them that they are wrong about things and can't trust their feelings. And it's also like a common thing in like systems of oppression.
Yeah. I wrote government/propaganda versus abusive relationship. And those are the two. Like I'm the only person you can trust one of the key ingredients to gaslighting someone.
Yeah, I was kind of impressed with the write-up that they had on the TV Tropes page about the real-life abusive relationships type stuff. It was kind of interesting to see that compared to like all of the other nerdier movie things that they have. Mm-hmm. They're also able to dial into real life a little bit there.
Yeah,
and it gets real. That's something that I think they've really improved on since... I mean, really, it's like... 2010s. Mm-hmm. It seems like they're...
Yeah, it's not a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Would you guys say your lists are more like lighthearted, jokey, or are they more cruel and mean?
I've got one jokey one that is... It's one of those tropes where it works as a joke because it's so bad.
Yeah.
And then the other four are varying levels of mean.
I think I've got one that's film based, and then that's not that bad, and then the other ones are pretty mean and pretty awful examples, I guess.
So is the play Gaslight or Gaslighting?
Gaslight.
Okay. Is it popular or just popular because of this?
It's a
technique.
It's a very good movie. But I think
it's not like award winning or anything, or
you know, it might be. I think it was probably nominated for Best Picture, but really its claim to fame now and what it's most known as is this gaslighting, being this metaphor for abusive relationship and you know, manipulating and lying to someone for the means of controlling them. In the movie, he ends up like she basically becomes imprisoned in her own house. And yeah, it's something that we hear a lot about more now, especially in the current era when people are paying attention to these sorts of things more. It's something that you can see in other stories to milder levels, but now I think people are more in tune with how abusive stuff like this actually is.
Yeah,
I think a lot of that's just the changing understanding of like power dynamics, and gender in relationships, and just kind of privilege.
Okay, so the 1944 one, the second one with Ingrid Bergman, had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 nominations, including Best Picture, Best Actor in a Leading Role, which is Charles Boyer, the bad guy, Best Actress, which Ingrid Bergman won for. I did not know that. Best Supporting Actress, which was, I think, the debut of Angela Lansbury. She's like 19 in the movie. And then Writing, Cinematography, and Art Direction. Wow. Actually, the Cinematography and Art Direction, it says Best Cinematography, comma, Black and White. Which I'm guessing maybe they had
just like
multiple awards. Like a black and white and a color.
Yeah, maybe like early into colorization. Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of want to look into that and see what it won.
Wait, so it was a remake and it came out in 44, you said?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the first one came out in 40. The second one came out in 44. Huh. Yeah, it's a good movie. You can check it out on Filmstruck 3 months ago.
I feel like it's some sort of streak going on of you mentioning Filmstruck on our podcast.
I found a shirt on, I'll bring it up in a minute. I found a shirt on Redbubble that's the Filmstruck logo, and it says Filmstruck gone too soon.
Nice.
Speaking of Redbubble.
I was just going to say, I found a couple of shirts, some hoodies on there. I think I'm actually going to pick up a laptop case.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, with our logo on it.
What? You don't say.
Self-plug.
What?
So if you go to Redbubble, I don't know what like the, if it's like, I don't think you can just go to Redbubble/OnTheTropes, but I don't know, man.
Yeah.
But if you search for,
I'm gonna try it right now.
If you search for On the Tropes,
you could probably just search for Redbubble On the Tropes on Google, maybe.
Let's see if that works.
But anyways,
that's cool. I kind of wish our logo was a little more logo-y.
It's pretty logo-y. It's got the lamp.
I guess. I don't know.
Well, then make us one, Kyle.
I can't. Do you know how long it took us to design our newest logo? I have a folder full of revisions and drafts, and flipping through them and seeing how it evolved is like actually really interesting, but it took a very long time.
It was kind of a process. Well, yeah, we've got a new design that mentions where we're from.
Wait, we've got two designs on there?
Yeah, stuff like that's kind of cool. I'd like to see, I know you were talking about a competition earlier, but someone like,
oh, if people design us stuff,
yeah, that'd be cool.
Oh, yeah.
If people design us stuff, we're more than willing to accept those designs. You can email them to us at onthetropes@gmail.com, and we'll make it happen.
So, folks, it looks like if you go to redbubble.com/people/onthetropes, you can get...
/people/onthetropes.
Some cool stuff from us.
Oh, my gosh.
Shirts, laptop cases, like I said, little bags and things for your...
Bags.
Items, I guess.
Stickers?
Yeah, there's like a studio pouch, whatever that is. And we've got a logo designed by longtime enemy of the show, Eva Destruction.
We should start making a line of shirts that's just the trope and the definition of it.
I wanted to do that somewhere. And I tried to do that. If you go to redbubble.com/people/onthetropes. Too long. Anyways, I did try to create like a Chekhov's gun one that looks like dictionary format, like pronunciation I don't know how to turn it into a shirt, though. It's just like I emailed them.
That's the beauty of it. Like, it's just on a white shirt, and it can be boring, but it's also incredibly nerdy.
Well, then you do it, because I don't know how to do graphic design. I don't even have Photoshop on my computer. People, we need your help. That's what I'm saying.
No, and I was actually thinking, so the lampshade in the logo is the lampshade trope. I think it'd be cool to do like On the Tropes logo in different tropes, like the breaking the fourth wall, like a breaking the fourth wall version of On the Tropes logo or something like that. One of the easier first ones that we did.
I wonder if people enjoy
that. We need like a little logo person or thing.
Yeah.
Oh, like a mascot.
Yeah.
I wonder if people like or hate listening to like the on-air production meetings. I feel like what we're doing right now. Yeah, I feel like they probably love it.
I kind of feel like they probably hate it. It's just
no.
No.
Anyways, should we jump into our top five
We could.
Gaslightings?
Sure. Right.
Don't even go to a break. We'll just do it.
Yeah, let's just jump right into it.
I thought this tape was going to be a conversation stimulator, man. I was going to ask you for your top five records to play on a Monday morning and all that, and you just had to ruin it. We'll do it next Monday. No! I'm going to do it now!
My number five is from... And I had to discussion with Dave about it a few days ago, and he doesn't think it really fits. Dave's my best friend.
You're supposed to say the co-host of your other best show, friend, you
Dave.
Doofus.
Oh, Dave is the co-host of my other podcast.
Award-winning podcast, yeah, on the rocks.
That just recorded their 250th episode.
Which can be found on TVTropes.org.
My fifth entry is from Batman Arkham Knight, and it is a moment because Scarecrow is in it, and he's been, I think, in all three of the Arkham or four Arkham games, but he's always messing with Batman. But he uses fear toxin, so I don't know if that really counts, but he's altering what Batman believes to be reality.
I think that really counts. I think
because Dave was thinking that
instead of using
his powers,
instead of using his wits, he's just using a gas.
He's just a douche.
Yeah.
But in Arkham Knight, there's a moment in that game where he fools Batman and the player very well, and it's like a hard hitting scene. And I don't really want to ruin it, even though the game's pretty old at this point, but it was like such a good trick, and he's like always doing this in the games, but in Arkham Knight especially, he kills off somebody, or so you think, and it's pretty mean and pretty dark. So yeah, that's my number five, the Batman Arkham Knight. Sir, what would be your number five?
So I'm gonna just go with probably my favorite example from the actual TVTropes.org page is my first one. Then I'll
spread your wings.
Yeah, then I'll get in my own picks. So under real life, they have the Stasi, which is the secret police of East Germany. And so if someone was suspected of being a dissenter, they'd sneak into the person's house and move things around, switch out types of tea, only tea, and do other things to distress them without them knowing what is going on. And like, it's been used as a way to kind of discredit people in movements. So yeah, watch out, folks.
If you're like, I put the tea in the second drawer, but now it's in the third drawer, it might be the Stasi.
It's the secret police, right? So yeah, watch yourselves. Governments are crafty.
I can't imagine being like, if I'm a potential government usurper, I don't think it's gonna be the tea in the wrong place that really does me in. Like, I can't find my Earl Grey, and then I'm just like, you know what?
English breakfast, and it's like, whoa.
Bring me to jail. I've had enough of this madness.
That being said, if someone took all of your coffee in your house and replaced it with decaf, you would probably
die on the way.
You'd probably go crazy.
Do you guys remember the Chris Farley decaf sketch?
No.
It's like a classic one where Chris Farley, you remember the Folger sketches where they'd be like, these are decaf crystals, could you like tell the difference? And it's Chris Farley parodying that, and he just like flips out in the restaurant, like loses it, starts attacking everyone, and is like, you know, screaming about how they lied to him. So I guess it kind of fits this trope in a way.
Yeah.
That's gonna be my next pick. Nick, what's your
a little preview.
My number five, I'm going with the standard in terms of government stories doing this. Going with 1984. A few quotes from the book. In the end, the party would announce that 2 + 2 = 5, and you would have to believe it. Another famous line is, war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. And then, of course, who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past.
Are you talking about the current administration? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait.
A lot of that stuff is actually based on real life. So the 2 + 2 = 5 was something that the Communist Party in the USSR would say, and it was like some slogan that they had for some five-year plan. Like, the five-year plan was going to happen in 4 years, so they said 2 + 2 = 5. So it's a direct allusion to that. And then the phrase Oceania was at war with East Asia was about like the changing dynamics between Russia or the USSR in Germany. It's just a really good book, and unfortunately it is as timely as ever. I believe around the end of 2016 it actually sold out on Amazon. I don't know what happened around that time. It might have been I think it was either my daughter being born or the Cubs winning the World Series, but it just drove people to really want to.
I wonder if it's because we played it at the Nightlight, and it randomly sold out that time, too. Maybe it was...
Can't explain.
It. Yeah,
was that around the time John Hurt passed away? Maybe people were...
It was, 2016, maybe.
Feeling nostalgic for...
John Hurt.
John Hurt.
You saying 2 plus 2 equals 5 makes me think of the Common Core math. And like how that whole system is crazy now.
Oh, how math is impossible now?
Yeah. And I just watched Incredibles 2.
Oh, yeah.
And trying to do math.
Gaslighting us into thinking that it's okay.
That it's better math.
It's better
math. Yeah. Oh, it's so intense.
Right. Kyle, what's your number 4?
My number 4 is Eternal Darkness, which is a GameCube game, which I haven't played, but it's like infamous across all of gaming as being this really scary game on a Nintendo console, which was extra surprising. But the game constantly did stuff to mess with the player. Sometimes you'd hallucinate, and the volume on your TV, like, it would display it, and it would act like it's going down, or it would tell you that your game was corrupted and you like lost your save, but it was just the game kind of messing with you as you slowly went insane in this game. I'd really love if they made a remake or a sequel to it, because it sounds like a game that would be right up my alley. But I've heard just that back in the day it was really messing with the players more than anything, making them feel uncomfortable by altering things around them in the game. So Eternal Darkness for the GameCube. Sir, what would be your number 4?
So my number 4 is this Chris Farley sketch that I just mentioned.
What are they hiding?
Are you aware, sir, that you are drinking Colombian decaffeinated coffee crystals?
Am I? Why, it's delicious. It tastes like rich-bodied regular coffee.
It took 264 hidden camera customers before that reaction was obtained. I am Knorben Knusen for Swedish Television 1, and tonight we are going to examine the American craze of hidden camera commercials, particularly what doesn't make it to your home television set. Watch this unused camera take.
Sir, do you realize that you are not drinking regular coffee, but Colombian decaffeinated coffee crystals?
What?
The great Chris Farley.
You're drinking Colombian decaf coffee crystals?
This plays well on radio.
Those are the high costs of trying to gaslight someone.
Yeah.
Shreveport, Louisiana, via international satellite hookup, the victim of that hidden camera commercial, Michael Huff. Mr. Huff, how do you feel about your experience on hidden camera?
Angry.
Nick, what's your...
And thank you from Swedish...
What's your number 4?
My number 4, it's a movie called The Silver Cord. It's from, I think it's from 1933. So right before Filmstruck went away, people were online making recommendations for things that you can watch on Filmstruck that are going to be impossible to find once it goes away. So this is one I saw come up, and I'm like, yeah, I'll check it out. I had no idea what it was about. Never heard of it before, but it's this really tense, quiet family drama about this guy played by Joel McRae, who's from The Most Dangerous Game. He is married. He brings his wife to meet his mother and his brother before they move to a... I think they're in Germany, and they're going to move to New York City because she got a promotion. She's like a scientist of some sort, and they're going to move to America, start a family. And this, the mom of the two boys has this like weird, gross Oedipal relationship with their two sons. So first she convinces the other son who's there with his fiance that he needs to break up with her. And she basically, she doesn't make him go crazy. She just outsmarts him and convinces him that she, that the girl doesn't love him and he doesn't love the girl. And then she tries to do the same thing to the other son. It's just a really good movie that I don't think has gotten much attention, and I have no idea where you can see it now. But it was, it's very claustrophobic feeling because they're all trapped in this small house while all this stuff's going on. It made me feel similar to when I watched Mother from a couple years ago, the Darren Aronofsky movie. So any kind of stately family drama that can cause similar feelings, I think, is good. So that's called The Silver Cord. Kyle, what's your number three?
My number three is from one movie, but I didn't really notice it until I watched the documentary, Room 237, which is a documentary that I wish it was back on Netflix, because it was kind of cool to watch. Room 237 is a documentary about The Shining, and it's just about a bunch of critics and I don't know who else is on it,
like, but super fans.
Yeah, they're like analyzing the movie and just talking about it, and a lot of their theories are pretty over the top and ridiculous. But some shots that they slow down or they put side by side, they show off stuff that I didn't realize to begin with. One of the shots that really was confusing was when they mapped out Danny's ride on his big wheel through the hotel, and how it's, if you like map it out, it doesn't make sense, and it's just kind of confusing and disorienting. Another thing they show, it's most of these shots, the ones that impressed me the most were with Danny, and one was him playing on the carpet. And I think it's when the girls roll the ball back to him, but the carpet design like flips or whatever. Like it's a continuity error, but you know, since it's Kubrick, it wasn't an actual error. It was just to sort of throw you off. But there's just a lot of things in that movie, and the documentary highlights a lot of them, and it's really interesting.
It's available to rent on all the normal places. It is available to stream on a streaming service called Realize. R-E-A-L-E-Y-Z. Realize.
Mm-hmm.
For free?
Well, if you have a subscription to this thing that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you might as well just rent it or buy it. It's cool. It's weird in the beginning because they show shots from like other movies, I feel like. But then they get into other things. It's a really, I feel like we talked about this on the show before. I wish they would do this type of documentary for more movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Shining has a lot of really strange, stuff going on in it. Sir, what would be your number three?
So I'm gonna go with, the movie Colossal, which came out in 2016, starring Anne Hathaway, Jason Sudeikis. So this is one of my favorite movies of 2016. I think it's directed by Nacho Vigalondo. I think it's probably one of the best just takedowns of toxic masculinity, and kind of especially the more subtle, it's subtle at first.
Yeah.
More subtle kind of ways that really controlling and abusive guys kind of essentially blend in and make themselves seem like nice guys.
It's great casting, having Jason Sudeikis be that guy, because he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, and we've got to know in real life. I mean, I have no doubt. I don't think he's as bad as his character at all yet. He's got some demons, you can tell.
You think so?
Sudeikis. I think he's got some complex stuff going on in that guy.
I don't know.
I mean,
I bet he's a nice guy.
He came up with my favorite SNL sketch of the decade, Main Justice. I think it's brilliant. I've talked about it.
Oh, was that the
Jamie Foxx and Justin Timberlake?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a scene in Colossal where he he's befriended Anne Hathaway. She's got this drinking problem. She comes to, goes back to her hometown, and he's this guy who she used to know who owns a bar. And she ends up, like, passing out drunk and wakes up, and he, like, brings over furniture and, like, says, oh, yeah, you know, you said you wanted to work at the bar, and I brought you this furniture. And she's like, I don't know if I remember that. He's like, oh, yeah, you said something about it last night. So the person I was watching it with, as soon as he said that, they were like, he's lying. Mm-hmm. And it just, it factors into like the entire film, just him constantly trying to set up this like alternate kind of sequence of events in their relationship. And it's just really toxic, which also kind of, I guess, parallels the fact that she has this alternate personality. Yeah, listeners, check it out, though. It's great. Best giant monster movie released in a long time.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that movie. Because it kind of, it came out of nowhere, and then once it came and went, I just also forgot about it. And I, it seemed cool. Anne Hathaway, being in it, was, sounded different. Mm-hmm. Not a type of movie she's usually one for, to do, but that's cool. Mm-hmm. Where would the con land on, like, gaslighting, like tricking someone that you, who you are,
con, like the wrath of con, or con, like a
con,
like
job.
A con job.
Yeah,
I wonder if
are they called con jobs? Is that the right term?
Yeah, that's so purely.
Yeah, I feel like it's different
financial
because the motivation's different.
Yeah, I don't know, for some reason when you're talking about it, and it probably has nothing to, they're, that's not similar at all, but like matchstick men, where they like completely trick.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's more
Nicolas Cage.
They're not doing it to mess with him. They're doing it to
advance themselves.
Yeah, to get rich.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Nick, what's your number three?
My number three is an episode of the TV show Happy Endings called The Kirkovich Way. So a little bit of background to this episode. There are two characters who used to date, and in the very first episode, she leaves him at the altar. So they're broken up for maybe half the series, and they end up hooking up, and the girl regrets it immediately, so she leaves before the guy even wakes up. And she's trying to convince him that it never happened and it was just a dream. So that's not actually where the main gaslighting comes in. It's not her lying to him. He talks about it with his friend Brad, who's played by Damon Wayans Jr., who's married to that girl's sister. So the two sisters conspire to convince Brad that he was with both of them on the night of the supposed hookup, so it couldn't have been real. And they go as far as to faking a movie rental receipt, and they talk about how they ate popcorn together, and the wife like plants popcorn kernels in his teeth while he's napping. And she convinces him that he's unable to remember things, and it. Apparently, this is just something that their family does. It's the Kirkovich way, is manipulating your husbands like this. And Jane says that she's done this so many times to him that he's one MRI away from getting a free one.
Jesus.
And he talks about how his forget-ems are getting worse. Yeah, so it's like one of the only funny examples of this that I could come up with. But I wanted to squeeze a comedy one in.
Yeah, the Happy Endings was a show that ended too soon. Also, yeah. I thought,
I love that show.
I'm not really sure what kind of legs that it could have.
Yeah,
like, but it was really funny back in the day.
Kyle, what's your number two?
My number two is one of my favorite books of all time, and turned into a movie by Martin Scorsese, and that's Shutter Island. I'd say the movie probably does gaslighting a little better, because it also does the same thing that The Shining does, where it has a lot of continuity errors, and it's stuff that happens in the background that maybe isn't described in the book, that is really, it makes the main character, Leonardo DiCaprio, really question reality and whether he, if everyone's against him or if everything is as it seems. And the twist in the end and everything that happens is insane. And Yeah, it's another one of these examples. I don't want to spoil too much, but it's the main character is just constantly being messed with, and it's done in a really intense crime mystery way, and it's really cool. The book is really good. I wasn't really that thrilled with the movie, but I think it's just because I don't know, it was handled a little differently.
Yeah, I like the movie. I remember it kind of getting mediocre reviews.
It didn't really feel like I was excited to hear that Scorsese was doing it, but it also didn't seem like his type of movie. I don't know.
People kind of said it was a lesser Scorsese. I kind of want to rewatch it, though.
Yeah, because I watched a couple of reviews leading up to this just to make sure I wasn't going crazy. And some people really liked it. It might just be one of those movies that you just need to see a couple times to really figure out what's going on. But
yeah, I think I liked it more than most people did at the time. But I want to dive into it again.
It has a really great cast, too.
Yeah.
Sir, what would be your number two?
So my number two is this thing that's happening called the invisibility prank. You guys heard of this?
Is that the blanket and the cats and the dogs?
Is it like the Emperor Wears No Clothes?
Oh my God. No,
that's a good example, actually.
First of all, I think this is terrible. So, like, listeners, if you do this to your kids, I'm going to think you're a terrible parent. Essentially, people, and it's not just kids that are doing it, it's like adults or like older folks, their parents. They'll basically like put like a blanket over someone. I think it is.
Yeah.
Is that the thing you're talking about?
Yeah. The ones that I've saw, I haven't seen people do it to people.
No, I see
them do it to their dogs or their animals that actually care.
They claim to be able to like do this trick that makes a person invisible. So then they like lift the blanket off and everybody in the room pretends they can't see that person. And even to the point of like they'll take a photo of like them sitting.
Oh, that's
like
a little different.
There. And then take a picture like with the person in the same spot and then show it to them like on their phone.
That's me.
It's really, especially because like most of the ones that are floating around are them doing it to children. And they're like really flipping out, like getting like really scared.
What's the point of that other than to make your child feel bad?
Yeah, exactly.
For the YouTube
because America, for the YouTube views. I don't know.
You want to be the next like hit?
It's just such crap. Like it's one of the worst things I've seen.
No, and the one that I was talking about is just people holding up a blanket and then they'll lower it and show their dog that they're behind it, and they'll do that a couple times, and then they'll let go of the blanket but dodge behind a door or like a corner and they'll act like they just disappeared. But they do it in front of their dog or their parrot, and the animal, their reaction is kind of funny.
Where'd you go?
With
a kid though, that's mean. Just like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, I'll show you guys a couple videos. It's just, it's heart-wrenching. I mean, I watched maybe two. I can't even get through the one with a kid. I'm like, I can't watch this happen.
Yeah,
so parents who are doing that, if you're listening, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Stop it. You stop it now.
Cut it out.
But if you do it to like a very gullible adult friend, that's kind of a hoot.
Yeah, like they did it to one family did it to their dad, and it was pretty funny.
it's funny until like a certain point where it becomes not funny again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can tell that a lot of the videos are right up to that point or way past it. And
yeah.
I think people need to be a lot more caring for children. Like that's a pretty screwed up thing to do.
Yeah, that's not great.
So yeah, the invisibility prank, God, Trump's America. Nick, what's your number two?
My number two is from the movie Whiplash, and it's not J.K. Simmons making Miles Teller feel like he's going crazy as much as he's just making him doubt his own abilities and his own talents and things that should be maybe not objectively obvious, but should be obvious to him that he's really good. And his whole impetus behind it is, it's like the quote that he has in the movie, the two worst words in the English language are good job. And it's just another, it's not driving him to insanity, but it is driving him to self-destructive behaviors. Like he almost dies because of the way he gets treated, and he hurts his hands and he hurts his relationships with his family and his girlfriend. And it's all just for this guy's weird motivation of what he thinks is being helpful, I guess, in his own kind of demented way. But yeah, this movie's been on my mind lately because I was talking with, I don't know if you were a part of the conversation.
Best endings.
Yes, best movie endings from the last 10 years because, you know, it's 2019. At the end of the year, we're going to be seeing a lot of like best this of the decades. And Whiplash is a very definite number two best movie ending for me this decade.
That kind of reminds me of just the idea of like the abusive or crappy coach.
Yeah.
I was watching this making of Rocky documentary, and Sylvester Stallone talks about how in the original, Mickey was supposed to be like really terrible, like really racist, and like
the character of Rocky.
Yeah.
Well, no, Mickey.
His trainer was supposed to be basically like toxic to Rocky. And part of the ending was him like deciding he doesn't want to train with him, doesn't want to be like him, and could have been a totally different movie.
I like it better this way.
Yeah.
Yep. Kyle, what's your number one?
I need to end it on a happy note for my list in particular.
Good, because mine is not.
And I'm a complete poser because I don't watch The Office, but Asian Jim, played by Randall Park. completely. I don't know. There's been a few scenes from The Office that have popped up, and I've watched them, and I just remember them. And I rewatched this, and it's just so good. Jim pranks. I can't even think of his name now.
Dwight.
So well, and this one, even though it doesn't, it's not like a very elaborate one because it only lasts like a minute, maybe. It's really good where Randall Park just replaces Jim, and he knows the code to his phone, and he has a picture of him and Pam and their kids. Yeah, and like it's so good, and Dwight's reaction is great, and he's like, he's just an actor friend of theirs.
You don't see race, good for you.
Yeah, it's so great. I'm sure there's a lot of interactions between Jim and Dwight that could be on this, but yeah, this one is just like, I love everyone's reaction to it. Dwight's just so great.
Plus Randall Park is awesome, so anytime you squeeze him into a list.
Yeah, and when I looked it up, I was expecting to see a list of appearances, but I'm pretty sure this is like his only,
I think it's his only appearance.
Yeah, which is awesome that he'd be okay with just like not being necessarily like a reoccurring character, but yeah, it's awesome. So that's my number one, sir. What's your number one?
So I wanted to talk about racial gaslighting and just this, which is essentially like when black people say that racism exists, and you know, somebody will be like, hey, what about Oprah or
this
LeBron?
This is a post-racial.
Yeah, or they'll say this, you know, things that doesn't count because of whatever. And I was trying to think of a specific example, and this is probably the only space where I'm going to talk about this Covington incident. Oh my God. So we're supposed to believe that these kids who are from an all male, all white Catholic school who regularly dress in blackface.
I was going to say, I have seen sort of black students
if blackface counts.
Yeah.
If these white kids in blackface counts. So these kids do this at their school. And they are wearing MAGA hats, so we're supposed to believe that they're not. We're supposed to not believe our eyes and what we saw in the incident, and that they're not racist and all this crap like that. Yet Trayvon Martin wore a hoodie and is a thug no matter what. So I can't wear a hoodie, yet these kids can wear MAGA hats. It doesn't make any sense. And I just want to point out, everybody that I've heard about in that video is awful. So black Hebrew Israelites are a cult and awful and misogynistic, and they advocate rape. Obviously these Covington kids are pretty terrible, and I'm just gonna say some criticism to be leveled at somebody who is being claimed by the leftist community who was a Vietnam era veteran. I'm just saying, I'm just saying, I'm not saying that's how I feel, which I'm sure you can guess how I feel, listeners. However, and let's not forget, all of these men were at an anti-abortion rally. They're all terrible. Like, like, how is that not the issue? They're all at an anti-abortion rally.
Yeah. And I've seen things. I've seen things from liberal friends posting, oh, you didn't see the whole video. Other people were mean to them, so what they're doing is okay.
It's like,
and then I saw things where people were saying, oh, like the regular media from liberal with the quotes, people saying the regular media isn't showing you the whole story. Look at this video. And they were linking to a site that I'd never heard of. I looked it up and it's run by like a Breitbart contributor. Right. It's like, you people are so, I can't talk
that's,
about it. Anyway.
Yeah. That's all I, and that's pretty much all I've said about it. And that's all I want to say. all those men are awful.
Yep.
Come on, America. I shouldn't expect any better. Jeez. Nick, what's your number one?
My number one, it's an intense movie, but it'll be a little bit more fun than that. Covington nonsense. Anyways, this is a movie. It's another Filmstruck find called The Devils. It's from the 70s. It's made by a filmmaker named Ken Russell. Did you watch it? So originally it had an X rating. I think it was banned for a little while, or maybe it's an original form. It was banned. Roger Ebert gave it the worst movie review I've ever read. he gave it a 0-star movie review, and he's so just like snide and dismissive that it's really, I lost a decent amount of respect for him after reading this review, because it's a really good movie. It is about this handsome Protestant priest who comes into town, and there's what's it, a monastery of nuns? Whatever, yeah, it's, whatever it's called.
A nunnery?
A gaggle.
Yeah, it's a nunnery.
I was going to call it a coven, but I was pretty sure that wasn't right.
Witches, yeah.
Anyways, this coven of nuns, he goes to like work at their church or to lead their church. And Vanessa Redgrave plays the mother superior type nun, the one in charge. And she's obsessed with this guy. And he ends up getting married at kind of, throws her into a little bit of an insanity because she's jealous and she's sexually repressed. And at the same time, he's Protestant. The French government is working with the Catholic Church, and they're trying to conspire a way to basically remove him from power. They want to take over the town, and they don't want the Protestants to rise up. The nun ends up accusing him of possessing her in the church and said that he's worked with the devil. And the church takes this opportunity to leverage that against him. They hold an exorcism of the nuns that is basically just sexually assaulting them. And then there's another exorcism scene that's more like an orgy. I think they defile a crucifix at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So all the nuns basically, rather than admitting that they're pent up and sexually repressed, they all agree that this guy is working with the devil and has possessed them. And he gets put to death, and it is even brought to them plainly, hey, he's going to die because of you guys lying. And they're like, yeah, we're fine with that. They would rather lie to other people and have this guy die than tell the truth to themselves. And then the ending, the woman is still like in love with him, even though the guy dies and she lets him die. He gets burned at the stake, and one of the government workers like tosses, the nun is like on the ground weeping or whatever, and the guy tosses her his like petrified leg bone or something. So that's kind of how the movie ends.
well, yeah.
The original ending was she takes his leg bone and, supposedly, I haven't been able to track down the original footage, but she begins furiously pleasuring herself with it, supposedly.
So, listeners, if you have a copy of this, don't send it through the mail.
it's so crazy. But
Ken Russell, man.
It's a good movie, though. I mean, it's...
Wait, how do you know that that's...
Because it's very famous. And it's
very famous, but not found anywhere.
Yeah, because I mean, that's insane.
I don't know. The internet is also insane.
That's an insane thing for anyone to put in anything.
Yeah.
Even if it ended up on the cutting room floor.
Let's not forget that this is a movie that stars Oliver Reed.
What is he from? I only.
He's from being the most famous, like, drinking British actor. Well, like,
he certainly looks like it.
Yeah. I mean, he just. That's his whole thing.
He reminds me a lot of Ian McShane. Yeah. Is that a good comparison? Yeah. He's great in it.
Yeah.
It's a really good movie.
Oliver Reed's great. Three Musketeers, 1973. Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Is he in that?
He's in it.
Oh, I haven't seen that in years.
Gladiator. He's the Gladiator trainer.
What was Ebert's biggest beef with it?
I don't know. Ebert often objects to movies that are on this side of
like, not about delicious burgers. Didn't he rave about
Good Burger? Yeah.
Yeah, he'd love that.
He's a little bit of a Puritan when it comes
in
to
a
this
weird
type
way,
of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
because I think there's some other stuff that he's liked that's sketchy.
I mean,
we gotta have a career. We gotta really have an Ebert episode.
I do like Ebert.
I don't even know what that episode would be about. It would be awesome.
Just like everybody picks the times that they really agreed with him and like really disagreed with him.
I mean, he named Crash as his best movie of the year, so he's not perfect.
Jeez.
But yeah, he's definitely wrong on this one. The Devils is a great movie.
It's
way better than Crash.
It's way better than Crash.
Anyways, I feel like Crash was like the Academy gaslighting us.
Oh, yeah. That was
into thinking that that was a good movie.
I mean, that's that whole, you know, talk about post-racial nonsense. God, Crash.
That movie. Anyways, so those are our top five examples of gaslighting. We've got some feedback. If you guys are ready for it.
I'm ready for your feedback.
This is feedback from John Ducker. He says, just downloaded the Tearjerker episode. And as is my habit, jump to the end to check if you guys played my game. And then
that's his habit.
Slow clap.
That's awesome.
Slow clap. Well done, team. Not only did you have an amazing batting average knowing which was the fake film, but you even knew about the real obscure film surprisingly often. Very impressive. Favorite quote from the episode. Nick, in heaven, there is no beer. It's a polka documentary. How did you know that? Themo, I like polka. Yeah. Great to have you back, Themo. And he's
not here.
He's on vacation. He's not here at all. He's in Las Vegas meeting Pendulette. And then we have feedback from friend of the show, Eva. Enemy of the show. Whatever. She says, you think we're talking... This is also in regards to the Tearjerker episode.
Does she go by Eva Destruction in any other capacity besides... our show.
I think it's just this show.
I don't know.
Doesn't it come from some writing project we were trying to do like years ago?
Eva Destruction is like such a great name.
It is. This email is titled Tears Jerked.
Yeah.
She says, you think being a parent makes you more sensitive than you used to be? You have no idea the wild ride PMS can offer. I once cried watching Beyond Thunderdome when Master is pleading for Blaster's life.
Who didn't?
Incidentally, Master is played by Angelo Rosito, the character in Freaks who passes the loving cup in the wedding scene. A loving cup.
A loving cup.
Her list, mine are all songs from Jim Henson's Funeral.
Lead into next episode.
From Jim Henson's Funeral. Big Bird singing It's Not Easy Being Green.
Oh.
Carol Spinney in that giant yellow bird costume. His voice breaking, singing about how lonely and unremarkable he is to be green, which he is not. But somehow, and I think this is the magic of the Muppets, that no other animation or special effect has achieved, you buy it all the way.
Where was that being shown? Just like
I didn't want to look it up.
I guess it's Jim Henson's Funeral. I don't know if I want to.
Yeah, I didn't want to watch it.
I don't want to watch it either.
I get sad enough looking at the picture of like Kermit putting his hand on the picture of Jim Henson, or the drawing of Mickey like putting his arm around Kermit that the Walt Disney Corporation sent the Jim Henson Company. Anyways, any other children's song would have been a triumphant ending when where the person singing with the help of his or her friends would realize how wonderful it is to be who you are. And all the song musters is, it'll do fine, and I think that's what I want to be. Red Dirt Girl by Emmylou Harris. Two songs with the same tune, River Valley by Gene Autry and Time Changes Everything by...
River Valley.
What did I say?
River Valley.
Red River Valley.
My bad.
And Time Changes Everything by Jimmy Dale Gilmore, who you may better know as Smokey, the conscientious objector in Big Lebowski.
Market zero, Smokey.
I'm sorry, dude. Apparently, there might be a new Big Lebowski.
I saw that only interested in a movie about the Little Lebowski.
Yeah.
I mean, the scenario or a prequel.
I'm sick of the reboots. Mm-hmm. If the Coens are involved, I trust that they'll do something interesting with it, but I don't know that I need it.
Yeah. After Scruggs.
Yeah. You didn't like Scruggs?
I liked it. Did you rank yours?
I would probably go. Let me see if I can pull mine. 5-1-3-4-2-6. No, 6-2.
Yeah. I'll have to.
And then the last one. If I Could Only Fly by Blaze Foley.
Did I say on the episode that one of the listeners of, well, I guess she's a listener of both of our shows now.
Yes.
Amy said that the Tearjerker episode was her favorite that she's heard from On the Ropes.
It was one of my favorite ones that we've done too.
She said, I think her main thing was that she had heard of most of the things that we talked about. Mm-hmm. So, but she liked that episode a lot.
It's a good one. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. That was a long pause that I apologize for. But Sam Elliott from The Big Lebowski finally getting an Oscar nomination for
that Bigfoot movie?
The Bigfoot movie?
It's not even out yet.
Oh, right. No, he's in A Star Is Born. He's good in it.
Hmm.
He was just off of my Best Supporting Actor list. He was on it for a little while, and I had to give him the boot after I saw Burning. But he's really good in it.
Were they all nominated from A Star Is Born?
The three main people, yeah. Bradley Cooper, Lady Gags, and...
Do you think Lady Gags is going to win?
I think Glenn Close will probably win, but... I don't know, she's good in it. Well, she's really good in it.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No.
I mean, it's decent. It's not a bad movie.
I don't have a connection to any of the older ones.
Yeah, neither did I.
People involved. I really don't like
Bradley Cooper.
I'm not really a Bradley Cooper person.
He's okay. He's good in this. I mean, he's not amazing. He's doing a Sam Elliott impression the entire time.
Yeah.
But she's really good. I mean, it goes off the rails, and I hate how it ends. But the scene, like when she first performs, it's pure cinema. It's really good.
It's not nominated for Best Picture, is it?
It is.
Well, before we move on to the next episode, so my ranking The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, from worst to best, The Mortal Remains.
Which one's?
So that's worst.
Oh, there.
The Mortal Remains.
Is that the last one?
Yeah, it's the last one. Near Algodones with James Franco.
Yeah, I had those two switched, but.
I had Meal Ticket. Which was hard to pick between that or The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which one I liked a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I liked Buster Scruggs just a little better. And then The Girl Who Got Rattled and All Gold Canyon.
Yeah.
Because Tom Waits is...
He's really good.
Not my favorite musician by any stretch of the word, yet mm-hmm. every time he's acting, it's...
I like him better as an actor than a musician. I like The Girl Who Got Rattled best.
It was good.
Buster Scruggs, just Tim Blake Nelson is so funny.
It's like... I will say this much about... I mean, it's... It's purely a dime novel Western. It mm-hmm. doesn't really attempt to... I mean, like, the Native American characters in The Girl Who Got Rattled don't exist. They mm-hmm. they never speak. They never...
Yeah.
Meal Ticket, I felt like there's some... I mean, obviously, that's the point, is that he's dehumanizing this guy. However, this is, like, some strong ableism around the fact that guy never even, like, got a chance to communicate... Never, like, nothing, which wouldn't have hurt the story in any way to give him a little bit more of a, like,
some agency. I feel like that's kind of the point of the movie.
I get it. It's just, I think it wouldn't have hurt the plot to have him. Yeah.
The way that Tim Blake Nelson talks in The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, when somebody calls him the West Texas twit, and he's like, I believe you mean the West Texas tit on account of that particular bird's mellifluous warble.
It's just fun. It's fun in a way that it frustrated me that the James Franco piece came right after it because it was seemingly...
I didn't like him.
Like, I get it. It's Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
And you know what? Steven Root is good. However, Steven, I can get my fill of Steven Root, you know, somewhere else.
But. Steven Root makes that.
Yeah, yeah, he makes a lot of things.
Pan shot. I like that movie. The more it sits with me, the more it's kind of gotten better in my estimation. It's not the it's not my top five Coen brothers.
I hear that. I think the ones, The Mortal Remains, just God, I thought it was so awful.
No, you didn't like it. It's I mean, it's awful. Okay.
Terrible.
Anyways, that was our episode on gaslighting. You can find us online. If you found us on tvtropes.org, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or... We're on Spotify?
On Spotify.
We're on some, I don't
Patreon.
Know.
We're on Spotify.
We're, if you awesome. If you listen to podcasts, you can find us.
Podcast services.
Wherever fine podcasts are sold.
Yeah. I haven't found a podcast site that we're not on, so if you're looking for us and you can't find us, or if you have other gaslighting examples, let us know at onthetropes@gmail.com. Twitter.com/onthetropes, Facebook.com/onthetropes. Head over to, what is it, redbubble.com/people?
redbubble.com/people/onthetropes.
Oh boy.
It's annoying, but it also makes sense. It's not some weird, like.
Yep, we don't have to, like.
35276 dash this.
True.
You could also probably just go to Redbubble and type in on the tropes.
Yeah, you'll find. It'll be the things that say on the tropes on them. We trust you guys.
We don't try to trick you.
Yeah. Yeah, we wouldn't trick you. Anyways. I've been Nick.
I've been Sir.
And Kyle.
And join us again next week. We're going to talk about Jim Henson.
Jim Henson.